On behalf of the Mayflower Church, friends and members of Laura's extended family, I'd like to welcome you all today to this service to remember and celebrate the life of Laura Louise Anderson, born October 19th, 1922, and died July 24th, 2021. In order to honor Laura's legacy, there are many aspects of an upbeat tone to parts of this service, like you just heard on the piano, along with the somber aspect of all of our awareness of the brevity of life and its eternal significance. Thank you for coming. This service has been prepared with Laura's endearing qualities in mind, including her faith, her mighty spirit, and mostly her love, which should remind us all of the love of Christ from which nothing can separate. Let us pray. Eternal God and our gracious, loving Master, we acknowledge you as the author of life and the victor over death. With that in mind, we have come to celebrate a gift you have given to us all here today, the gift of the life and witness of one of your dear children, Laura Louise Anderson. We thank you for that, all that Laura meant to us and the precious gifts she gave us through her winsome, friendly, caring, sometimes hilarious, and always loving personality. We thank you for the reflection of your love that Laura exemplified, and for the fact that we can do the same and be the same for others with the gifts that God has given to each of us. So as we remember and as we celebrate, help us, O Lord, to be reminded of the words of the psalmist that even if we have been granted the gift of long life, as you saw fit to give to Laura, that all of our days pass with the toil and troubles to be endured, but with the joys that come in the morning as we look to the skies. So teach us to count our days, so that we, like Laura, may gain a wise heart and a yearning for God. We offer this and all of our prayers in the name of Jesus the Christ. Amen. It is indeed a joy to see all of you here, and one of the unusual things for me is that I don't know most of you. But by the looks of you, I kind of wish I did. We have a common bond, though, even though most of us don't know each other intimately. And our common bond was Laura. That's about all you have to say today, Laura. I'm so nervous I forgot some of my papers here, but I can fix that. There are those here that would remind others that that happens a little frequently sometimes. It's okay. Hear now these words from Holy Writ. For everything there is a season, and a time for every matter under heaven, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to pluck up what has been planted, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to break down and a time to build up, a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance, a time to throw away stones and a time to gather stones together, a time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing, a time to seek and a time to lose, a time to keep, and a time to throw away, a time to tear, and a time to sow, a time to keep silence, and a time to speak, a time to love, and a time to hate, a time for war, and a time for peace. Those who have ears to hear, let them hear. And as for all of us that knew Laura,
we know what time it is. Thanks be to God. Roger Kennedy now comes from to share some tributes that came in written form. And those, all of you who will be speaking today, are perfectly welcome in a congregational church to use this pulpit.
There are a couple of friends of Laura's, from her past, obviously, that sent in written remembrances because they could not be here today. First one from Sherry Sutton, a co-worker of Laura's at Olufsen and longtime friend. I first met Laura when I hired onto Olufsen in January 1972. She was a tiny thing, dressed to the nines with a huge beehive hairdo. I was quite intimidated by her, as I was so very shy. Little did I realize then that Laura and I would be dear friends for nearly 50 years. Laura was a real spitfire. I remember when she had a birthday party for Lauren at a Lugnuts game in the picnic area. A home run ball was hit where we were, and a kid jumped over the railing and took the ball. Laura, all 4 feet 11 of her, ran after him and got the ball back. Laura was fiercely loyal to the Olufsen Corporation, the Olufsen family, and her friends. She was a strict taskmaster, but didn't expect more from others than she did expect from herself. She was a dedicated mother, grandmother, and friend. She was my dearest and oldest, literally oldest, friend. She taught me everything I know about shopping. I have such fond memories of our shopping, especially at Christmas. A shopping trip always included Jacobson's, where she knew every clerk by name. She always treated me to a snack in the restaurant on the top floor. Laura was known for having dessert before the entree because she might be too full afterwards. She was extremely generous. She helped many people out financially throughout the time I knew her, friend or not. She always gave gifts to everyone at the office at Christmas. When the guys in the shop would go on vacation, she always gave them a $100 bill just in case they ran into an unforeseen expense. I don't know if the money was ever returned, but Laura wouldn't have cared one way or another. She also kept a huge stash of $2 bills to leave as tips. When we traveled, she always left some in the hotel as a tip for the staff. I have one that she gave me tucked in my wallet. Laura was very hard and a dedicated worker, working two or three jobs for years, and was a very active volunteer at Sparrow Hospital and McLaren. She also worked at Lynn & Owen Jewelries until just very recently. Laura and I had so many great times over the years. We had wonderful shopping excursions, traveling to Mackinac City and Mackinac Island, and visiting our co-worker in Marquette, stopping in Harbor Springs on the way home to spend a day or two with Al and Pat Olufsen. We had so many inside jokes and stories that kept us laughing the whole time. I'll never forget Laura and her Corvettes. She had two or three at different times, I think. She always said she wanted another before she passed, but unfortunately that didn't happen. Laura was my mentor, friend, mother figure, and sister, all rolled into a very small package. I miss her terribly, but am thankful that she is now at peace and restored to full health with her Lord and Savior in heaven. This next tribute comes from Cleela, the wife of Cliff Schultz, a co-worker at Olufsen. You know Laura was so special to Cliff, and she did such nice things for him and our family. That made her special to us. Nice memories of those things have been popping up as I was preparing to move to a different assisted living. The first items I ran across were the $2 bills she had given him for several years. There was enough of them for me to give the grandchildren one each with the explanation of the special lady who gave them to their grandpa. I know he wanted them to be used in some special way. The world, our world, is a much better place for having had Laura Anderson in it. Thank you.
It sounds like there's going to be some common themes here today. It's your turn, Patrick Keeney. Welcome to the pulpit.
I just hope I can do this without falling down. First, I'd like to read something here from 1 Corinthians. If I speak in the languages of men and of angels, but have not love, I am only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have a faith that can move mountains, but have not love, I am nothing. If I give all I possess to the poor and surrender my body to the flames, but have not love, I gain nothing. Love is patient, love is kind, does not envy, it does not boast, and is not proud. It is not rude. It's not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no right record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, and always perseveres. Love never fails. And now these three remain: faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love. I'm both happy and sad that we're all here today. But I thank you for being here. Now, I need to explain why I'm dressed in a sweater and not in a coat and tie. Because my father's in between my ears saying, you really should have a coat and tie on. This is a sweater that Laura gave me for Christmas one year. And I remember thinking to myself when I saw it, a purple sweater. What am I going to do with a purple sweater? 30 plus years later, I still wear it. It's a little worse for wear, but I still wear it. And I've gotten more compliments on this sweater than I think any other piece of article of clothing I have. So she knew something. We'll hear, I've heard a lot of things already, and we'll hear more. But Laura was one of those people that she had kind of opposites to her. I remember one of the first times I met her, she had a pair of bib overalls and a pair of saddle shoes on. But all of us remember Laura dressed to the hilt. She liked Scofie's restaurant. She liked Jacobson's. But she loved Flapjack Shack. I remember Dad commenting when they first started seeing one another, he didn't know if he belonged. Boy, did those two belong together. Comments that I've read or that we've heard already described Laura as memorable, fierce, spunky, sassy, classy, funny, caring, and most of all, loving. Her love could be tough. Part of what she went through with her son Jack demonstrated that. It could be widespread, and wow, have we all seen that. Okay. Aunt Jo, Julie, John, my dad, the people that she worked with. She saw all of them as her family. She saw everybody as her family. And we've already had that talked about. She wasn't without actions as far as her love went. Okay. She loved Stuart. Stuart was a bonus son. And his part in her life was huge. And it really kept her engaged and kept her going. And I think really honestly that's part of what helped keep her here for so long. We've all learned, I think rightly, she donated her body. Now, who thought she was joking? I thought she was kidding when she said she wanted to do that. Why would she do that? Well, because she might help somebody, and it would be her final act. And now that she's no longer here, she's in a place where she can care for all of these people yet again, Julie and my dad. And when I think of a fierce love, I think of her love for my dad and working to keep his memory and always remember her time with him. In the fairly recent past, she suffered some big losses. Her son, Jack, other people in her family, two daughters-in-law. But as the phrase goes nowadays, she persisted. She was careful not to favor anyone. Everyone was part of her family. And I, for one, will always remember her as a loving, loving person. One last thing I'd like to read. This is from 2 John. And I'll paraphrase a little bit. And now, dear friends, I'm not writing you a new command, but one you have heard from the beginning. I ask that you love one another. Almost me.
Thank you, Patrick. I'm not nervous anymore. I found my papers. Perhaps my favorite chapter in all the Bible is the 23rd Psalm. Hear now these words. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in the right paths for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the darkest valley, I fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely, goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord my whole life long. Thanks be to God. Shirley, welcome to the pulpit.
Good afternoon, everybody. I'm quite overwhelmed and very happy to see so many people out for Laura today. I told you I was going to do just a few sentences. I did a few minutes, a few more. And of course, I'll try to skip over, well, maybe I will, maybe I won't, some of the things that I wanted to say. Laura was our neighbor and friend, as well as part of our Mayflower family. This is my church. I found her here when I came here. She and my husband Eugene became friends first because he joined the board where she had been a longtime condo board member way back in 2003. And I recall, I put down a few things that I remember. She used to write this newsletter called Chit Chat, and I think there's maybe one or two neighbors out here that remember the Chit Chat. And she'd include bits and pieces that she heard about the neighbors, you know, illnesses or passings, special visitors, vacations, and other fun tidbits. I don't think she meant it as a gossip newsletter, though I sort of viewed it that way and warned Eugene to be careful what he shared with her for fear that it would end up in the Chit Chat. I became more acquainted with Laura after finding that she was a member at Mayflower where I had come to start going. She played an integral role in church. I recall her diligently carrying and protecting the blue bag that held the church donations. And I think she made the bank deposits, I'm not sure, but Lorraine can correct me if I'm wrong. Sometimes she would ask Eugene or me to bring it to her if she couldn't get to church. When I met her, when Eugene and I met her, she was still working at Sparrow. And that meant she was in her mid to late 70s, probably then, if she was going to be 99. Of course, she worked into her 90s at Lynn and Owen Jewelers downtown, where I believe she was also working when she worked at Sparrow. She was a hard-working woman. And my doctor, neurologist told me that her patients that worked longer did better, and Laura is certainly a testament to that. As I look back, I see Laura's concern for others. She revealed very little about herself and her background and how she was really feeling. I felt she was very guarded, but not reserved. She would ask, how are you doing and what's going on with you? You know, there was a lot going on in my family and she'd want to know that and what's going on with Eugene. And then she'd follow up with a phone call because she'd remembered, you know, whatever the details were and wanted to see how things were going. She was diligent in that way and with other neighbors as well. I remember Arlene Love over in Building 8. And she was by herself. And I mean, she'd say, well, Arlene likes watermelon. So she'd get watermelon and then she'd cut it up and she'd take it over there and she'd be calling her every day to make sure that she was okay as she was going down. She came to church with Laura sometimes. Whenever Eugene and I would ask how she was doing, she'd say, okie dokie, or doing fine for an old lady. She really didn't say anything much about having a bad day or not feeling well until these later couple of years here when she fell. She occasionally shared her concerns about the East Lansing smoke shop that her grandsons Jacob and Jeremiah ran. She was their bookkeeper. That's another job, third job. She was deeply saddened when the business did not succeed. It's amazing to look back and see all that she took on. Working up to three jobs at one time, responsibilities and commitments to her church, financial and remembering to bring donuts and whatever else she wanted, sometimes cheese and crackers, serving on the condo board, and even after relinquishing her larger role, she insisted that she keep giving out the parking tickets that we put in the back of our car, and that meant more bookkeeping because you had to have the license plate number and all that, so she was on top of it, I'm telling you. She spoke lovingly of Lauren and her other acquired children and grandchildren. She made clear that she supported them in whatever they had going on as well. She was devoted and a strong advocate for all that she loved, all whom she loved. And don't get me wrong, she did have a side. If you got on her bad side, you better watch out. Laura was known to be a sharp dresser and with impeccable grooming. She gave me this top, and a gentleman in the parking lot pointed out that houndstooth was her favorite, and I shared with him that she gave me this top. So I'm wearing this in honor of Laura. She gave it to me just within the last couple of years. She said that it just didn't fit her right. So I appreciate it, and thank you, Laura. And she loved fine jewelry. So I wore, you know, my best little jewelry that I have. And this is real pearls. You know, somebody else gave these to me as well. So I'm trying to do her proud. I certainly didn't measure up to, you know, her standards of dress. But I'm doing the best I can. Let's see here. Oh, she liked to go to the beauty shop twice a week. And I said, why you got to go twice a week? And she said, well, I go to get my hair done, and then I go back to get a comb out because I can't get it quite like the beautician. Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's see here. Oh, she was a staunch advocate for Lynn and Owen. My dad had a watch that he got after, you know, 35 years or whatever at General Motors, and it wasn't working. And she had me take it, and I think she said Stuart really worked on that for a while. It was an Omega watch. Yep, she had an eye for beautiful jewelry, though. She was sharp, and she did not save it. She wore her things. I remember that often she had to leave church to get in the car with Miss Shirley. Miss Shirley, are you here? Yes. Oh, yeah, there she is. Okay. Because they'd be going to the Wharton. And one thing, Laura had her season tickets, and when, what was that show that we went to see?
Was it the
Hamilton. Hamilton? Yes. I said, Laura, you think you can give me a seat? So she did. And then she wasn't able to go. So I sat with Miss Shirley and her daughter. She recalls many years driving that Corvette that somebody has already mentioned. And when whatever last car she had before that Buick Enclave, when she got ready to trade it in, she checked out a couple of smaller SUVs and didn't feel they were suitable, so she got the Buick Enclave. And my husband just got a kick out of that. We were invited, and maybe some of you recognize me. It's been a while back, but when she had her retirement party at the Eagle Eye Golf Club, I remember the grandsons were there, and Sharon Graham was there, and colleagues that she had worked with, and it was just a wonderful celebration of her work life. Oh, as time went on, both Eugene and I got to know Laura better. She invited us to join the annual birthday celebrations for herself and two of our neighbors, Peggy Black, who used to attend here and has passed away, and Virginia Mitchell. We were delighted and went out to dinner for each of our birthdays. We got to pick the restaurant. In the beginning, we were going to Finley's. And then because Eugene and I are vegetarian, she told us to pick out where we wanted to go for our birthdays, and we did, and we had a good time. We even went to the, not the University Club, but that Kellogg Center. And let's see, so we did that for several years until Virginia and Peggy moved away for health reasons. We also went to breakfast on a regular basis after church. Ina and Lois Rees, myself, were the regulars. In the beginning, Cosette even was a part of our group. And then occasionally my son Jason would join us, and Pastor Rick would sometimes come, and you, I think, and Deanne have joined us before. Several others have joined us, Lorraine and them. And we usually went to Flapjack, and occasionally we went to Spud's, and Laura knew somebody that had a restaurant down on Pennsylvania, so we had to give him some business as well. So we would do that. She'd tell us where it was and get with it, and we did. Skip over some of this here. Oh, somebody already mentioned that she liked to have dessert first, and she did. And when I would try to steer her in a different direction, Ina or Lois would, you know, tell me to let her have her way. And so she did, and she was gonna have it anyway. She loved to send flowers and cards and surprise folks when least expected. When she was still getting around well, she would leave treats and notes on the ledge just inside of our building for me and Eugene. Then she'd go home and call us and tell us to go look downstairs. And she'd have stuff there. And she sent flowers several times, either for our anniversary or birthday. And when I had several illnesses and deaths in my family, she was sending flowers then. And the last card that she sent, she actually had them to write in there, "You have been through a lot and a lot more to come." She knew the challenges of life. She kept magazine subscriptions kept up and found out that I liked the Oprah magazine, so she just kept, she said, "Oh, you can cancel your subscription." And she started giving me that. And Eugene liked fitness. And, you know, pretty girls were on that Shape magazine. So she would get, I'm sure he's listening too. Anyway, she would put that in a brown envelope and put it on in her basket. And then she'd call and tell us to come and pick it up. You know, that was funny to me. Yep. She'd put, you know, cover it up, make sure that it was covered to Eugene and Shirley Potts. So I'd go get his magazine if he didn't get it. Let's see here. I'm almost finished, y'all. Yes. Oh, yes, it was hard for her to cut her working hours. Can you believe after she retired, she's working at the jewelry store for 5 days and then down to 3 days and then 2 days. Breaking her hip is what stopped everything, but I'm telling you, she loved going there, and I know y'all loved having her there. And I appreciated y'all having her there. And Laurie over here, one of our neighbors, was taking her to work and doing her gardening. You know, she wanted her garden kept pretty and everything outside her door. So I just want to say, I'm going to skip on down and say that I want to thank all of her friends and family that stepped up to get her to work and to various appointments with her grandsons while they were working or unable to take her. During the pandemic, she was lonesome sometime, but she still kept up with some dinner dates and lunch dates with friends that were willing to come out. She was very complimentary of her grandsons, Jeremiah and Jacob, and the care that they took as her health was failing. And she gave them grace when they were unable to do something, and she never complained. I believe she remembered what it was like to be young and carefree. She wanted them to pursue their dreams and to be happy and protected from the harshness of life. She had many qualities. Her love and loyalty for family were fierce, like a rattlesnake, is what I saw. She was happy to have Jeff come and bring her home from the nursing home. She knew it would be difficult since he had recently lost his wife. So I believe Laura worked hard, you know, at her jobs and everything, earning money so that she could be generous. And she was generous to all of us. Thank you.
As the handbell choir comes play for us today, as long as we're talking about clothes, during the time in the Friendship Center today, a little bit later on, my wife has been on the keyboard, is wearing a jacket that Laura gave to her. Tim, it was great to have you in our service this morning. It's your turn now. Welcome to the pulpit.
I really don't have a lot to say, except this is my chance to get the mask off, so I'll come up here. Well, a lot of what I had planned to mention, people already have. But I do want to say that we're doing this wrong. We should have had, I understand we have chocolate milk and donuts afterward here. We should have started with that and then done this. But nevertheless, they're there. I'm Laura's stepson, although she never called me a stepson. I was just her son. She would call herself my other mother, but they went here from the time my dad and her got married, but I went here as a child. And so that's the other thing that I thought was kind of ironic was I remember in probably 1962 or so, we started coming here. I sang in the junior choir right over there. My mother's funeral was here. I sat over there. My dad's funeral was here. I sat over there. Jack's funeral was here just a few months ago. Sat over there. So there's room for advancement, apparently, because now I'm in the pulpit. So. My dad and Laura were married, I think, in 1980. I don't specifically remember the date. It was summertime. I do remember that, and I think it was 1980. And as I think Pat said, they were very well suited to one another, and Laura told me several times that it was a good marriage once she straightened my dad out. And I never asked for details or anything, but she did kind of straighten him out. I did notice that. I just didn't know where that was coming from. I think we get this from my older brother who has health issues and couldn't come here, but he's a retired pastor. So, you know, my younger brother, Pat, who was the first one up here, did a couple of Bible passages. I'm going to do one, and it sounds kind of weird until you think about it a little bit, but it's from Psalm 116, verse 15. It says, "Precious in the sight of the Lord is the death of his saints." And that, to me, just kind of strikes me weird, like God, you know, we're often sad when somebody passes away, and this is saying that God thinks it's precious. But I think it's because he's calling people home, and they're with him. Now, being the nerdy scholar that I am, really it's just being retired and having a lot of time. I looked up the Old Testament was written in Hebrew, so I looked up the word precious, which in Hebrew, I'm going to butcher it, I'm sorry if anybody speaks Hebrew. It's kamed, and it means to delight in, beautiful, greatly beloved, of high worth, dear, beloved. So that's what God thinks when he takes one of his saints home. And, you know, this might come as a surprise to some of you, but I also looked up the word saints, and it's kaseed, and it means pious people, godly, merciful, a believer who's died and gone to heaven. So if you've known me for a long time, I probably haven't seemed saintly to you, but I'm a saint, according to this, according to what it means of high worth, dear, God's beloved. And so that kind of counterintuitive, precious in the sight of God is the death of his saints. That does mean that he's happy to bring us home, if you're believers, and that he considers us to be of high worth. And it, you know, I really can't think of, people have said a lot of things, like I said, I was going to bring up, but I'm going to skip over, but if I ever knew somebody who I thought really did qualify as a saint, it would be Laura. She, you know, we've heard about her generosity, her caring about her neighbors, her caring about her coworkers, her employer. By the way, Stuart, I think, was a better son to her than I am, or was, but Laura was a saint. And I know that's kind of a cliche, but, you know, it's a person who lives out their faith, which she did. She did the proper thing. She loves who she comes in contact with. She cares for them. She's an example to others. She has a way of doing things that is distinctive and noticeable in its quality. It has grace. And grace, again, little definition, you know, is unmerited favor. She didn't care if she didn't do things for you because she felt like she owed you that. She did things for you because she felt like you needed it or she cared about you. And so She's an example to me of what a saint is and what I should try to be more like. Now, I don't know, maybe it's only been mentioned once or twice, her Corvettes. This is what a saint she was. You know, from the early 80s, she would let me take her Corvettes for like the weekend, you know, which that's a lot of trust. And I know I got at least one date with a girl who thought it was my car. And it didn't last because I couldn't tell her, no, it's my mom's car. So didn't work out, but, you know, it was fun while it lasted. You know, Laura was the way that she was because she chose to be that, and she chose to be my mother. When my dad and her got married, I was in my mid-20s, so, you know, she didn't change my diapers or bandage up my skin knees or anything. I was pretty well past that part of my life anyway. But, you know, if I was in pain, she felt pain. She encouraged me in what I was doing. She celebrated my successes and suffered with me in my failures and losses. She loved my children. She loved my wife. And it was all a choice. She chose to be my mother. She could have been, since, you know, I was grown up and gone and out of the house, she could have just been the nice lady that my dad married. But she chose not to be that. She chose to be my mother. And the only regret that I have for that was she used to call me sometimes at work. I'm retired from the sheriff department. And if she needed to get a hold of me at work, sometimes she'd call. And if I wasn't in the office or whatever, she'd tell the dispatcher, well, just tell Sergeant Keeney his mommy called. And so I suffered a little bit as a result of my relationship with Laura, but it was well worth it. And so I'm honored to be called her son, honored to have been her friend, and to have her as a teacher to me of what I should be in more of in my life. So thank you.
Yeah, where'd it go, Shirley? Is this yours? There we go.
Thank you.
Tim, you're a saint. And I'm looking at a lot of saints today. And the amazing thing about Laura is, you're right, she wouldn't have called herself a saint. But she was. And you're right, Tim. Precious in the sight of the Lord is the death of his saints. We've gathered today because we must. Most of us are aware of some of the difficult and trying circumstances surrounding the last weeks and days of Laura's long life. But Laura had a one in a million personality, and I must admit that I'm a little envious of those of you who knew her during her most productive years. That is why we have gathered today. And already I've been reminded of some of what made Laura such a unique and shining example of what it means to be a human being, a real good human being. Thank you so much for the inspirational words which have already been shared today. In some sense, there is not much I could add, so I've only got about 40 minutes to go. Can't wait for those donuts, Stuart. But I did have the exceptional privilege, as her minister, of getting to know Laura best during the courageous battle she fought over the grief of losing her son, Jack. And then again during the valiant and painful struggles near the end. During those many visits, my admiration and love for her only increased as she fought one of her two greatest battles in life, ironically, at the beginning and at the end of life. Laura fought old age more fiercely than anyone I have ever known. I do believe. and she was an inspiration to me. During my tenure here at the Mayflower Church, and it's been over 4 years now, I became acutely aware of the fact that she despised her waning ability to give and be there for others as the strength of her body slowly gave out. But that indomitable spirit never gave out. Laura was a giver par excellence for her family, for her friends, and for her church, certainly for her God. And she did it with such extravagance, selflessness, and kindness, but always with that little devious and devilish look in her eyes that contradicted her profound generosity. I will always remember the first work day I attended here at church not too long after I became pastor, and I understand when I came here as pastor that I was expected to be there for work days. Kind of, I guess. But soon after, the volunteers arrived and began digging, shoveling, raking, trimming, mowing, weeding, and painting. That Buick Enclave SUV pulled up near the entrance to the lobby. I knew Laura, but at that time I didn't know her well. And out of the car came boxes upon boxes of donuts with chocolate milk in quantities far beyond even the most ardent workers could consume. And when I volunteered to take them home, my wife had a little different idea about that. Just kidding. During a more recent time, at the occasion of my mother's 90th birthday celebration, that happened during a worship service here at Mayflower just one day after Laura's own birthday, Laura made sure that my mom had a corsage, compliments of that same caring, giving person we all knew. One of her most endearing qualities was her sense of humor. Even during those last days as I visited with her, she and I shared hilarious laughter in spite of her pain and her grief, as she remained so lightning quick on her feet. Anyone who knew Laura was aware of this rare gift that she possessed. And since I enjoy humor, we all do at Mayflower, and perhaps that's universal, but it was the rarest of gifts. And she brought happiness and joy to me during those visits when I thought it was me who was supposed to do that for her. One of the most important persons in her life was her boss, Stuart, who suffered a loss of his own recently, that of his mother. So instead of sharing from this vantage point, he shared with me some of his thoughts from his reluctant viewpoint. In other words, reluctant to share publicly, but because Laura was so much more than that to him. And he wrote a tribute that I have incorporated here, but I have left copies, a number of copies, if you'd like, a copies of Stuart's tribute to Laura as an employer and as a friend and so much more. They're over there. Recognizing Laura as so unique and extraordinary as she was to all of us, he shared a few things that I find fascinating. One was that Laura was an ambassador of preparedness. He noted Laura's stash of everything from paper clips to flashlights, from a sheet of paper to a piece of tape, to an envelope or a stamp. Laura had boxes, bundles, reams, and cases, which would show up at your doorstep as if she had labored all night long. While Laura handled logistical details with ease, she had an uncanny ability to serve and care for all of us as if we were own children. Stuart wrote that. We all agree with that. She had the spiritual gift of rejoicing with those who rejoice and weeping with those who weep. And what a gift that was. Stuart appropriately reminds us that she carried and lifted us upon her tiny shoulders, but with a mighty spirit. During her last few years, as she should have been caring more for herself, she fought harder to take care of all of us. To put this into a biblical perspective, Laura had, I believe, a rare but enduring attribute. Other than with his disciples,
We are given only brief glimpses into the lives of Jesus' friends. And among his most endearing friends, however, were those of Mary, Martha, and Lazarus, the brother and sisters with whom Jesus was apparently very close friends with, quite intimately so. In one intimate setting recorded in the Gospel of Luke, Sister Martha welcomed Jesus into their home. While Martha was busying herself with work details around the house, Mary was sitting at Jesus' feet, listening to all he was saying. Martha then protested that Mary had left her with all the work, while Mary was just taking it all in, entertaining her guests with conversation. Jesus reminded Martha that Mary had chosen the better way. Some of us have had difficulty with that, as we sometimes feel that as diligent and responsible as Martha was, she might have drawn the short straw with Jesus. Nonetheless, the rare gift Laura possessed was that she was both a Martha and a Mary. She could take care of business, but take even better care of us. That would be someone whom Jesus would commend, I'm sure. I have a feeling that conversation with Jesus and Laura might have already occurred. One last thing about Laura, as noted by Stuart. She didn't like going to funerals. So it's traditional that ministers wear a white stole. I thought I'd just wear the green one today. Laura, it's really not a funeral today. Green is what represents plants growing and keeping growing, and Laura's influence has kept growing with all of us.
The only funerals that she was known to attend, according to Stuart, were for her husband Lauren and her son Jack. And she once remarked to Stuart, "I don't go to funerals, so I don't expect anyone to come to mine." Boy, would she have a surprise today. She probably is already aware of this. The reason for this is straightforward. To Laura, it didn't matter how you said goodbye. It only mattered how you said hello, which in Laura's mind included a big hug. Yes, we are here today to say goodbye to Laura. Bon voyage, Laura. But since we have been so inspired by her life, her faith, and her love, we're going to take one more opportunity to say hello to Laura today as we do something she always encouraged everyone to do, and you know what it is. Well, we really haven't done it first, but there's no celery sticks on the table back there, folks. Eat dessert first. As we eat, let us do so with the inspiration she gave us. And that it will only be a short time before we were able to say again, "Hello, Laura. It's so good to see you. How about a hug?" Thanks be to God.
Thank you.
I was in on the discussion about what song we'd end with, and we all agreed it had to be something bright and cheery. And you done good. Hear now these words. Listen, I tell you a mystery. We shall not all die, but we will all be changed. In a moment, in a twinkling of an eye, at the last trumpet. For the trumpet will sound, and we will be raised imperishable. For this perishable body must put on the imperishable. And this mortal body must put on the immortal. And when this perishable body puts on the imperishable, and when this mortal body puts on our immortality, then the saying that is written will be fulfilled. Death is swallowed up in victory. O death, where is your victory? O death, where is your sting? The sting of death is sin, and the power of sin is the law. But thanks be to God who gives us the victory through our Lord Jesus Christ. Therefore, my brothers and sisters, be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord. For you know that in the Lord, your labor and Laura's labors are not in vain. Hallelujah. Now, we are going to make our way to the Friendship Center. Just before the postlude plays, I want to make a couple of announcements. You gather in there. There should be places to sit for most everybody. We've got a good crowd here today, and that's very fitting for Laura. And there may be some of you that would like the opportunity to speak. There'll be a microphone if there's anything that you'd like to share. And then for those of you that would like, following our time in the back with the chocolate milk and the donuts, thank you, Stuart. We have a plaque to go in our memorial garden, and we'll have just a brief service to commit Laura to the ages, to God, and to the loving arms of her Savior. Let us enjoy the dessert after we enjoy the postlude. It's easy in a crowd like this to forget that there is still the danger and the spread of terrible disease. Appreciate all the restraint that you have shown today. And while we have a crowd, just ask all of us to use the best restraint we can, certainly for safety, but also for the courtesy of each other. God bless each of us as we leave for the Friendship Hall. Hopefully most of you can stay for that, and a time of fellowship and remembrances. Go in peace.